Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. You can also join Doug on the phone, 615-737-1045, our number. With the one headline here for Titans training camp so far this morning, Paul told us that Delanie Walker came up limp, mentioned something about his toe, and he's inside with trainers inside the Titans facility. We'll give you more on that when Paul checks back in with another practice report, as the team drills have just started back up after some special teams work during that last commercial break. Doug, how are you?
Doing well. You know, you mentioned I saw Charles, had a chance to visit with him, got here a little early, he told me, he said, yeah, I'm stopping by, going to be on the show. And I said, you are, huh?
I mentioned to Charles, I said, I'll clear it with Doug. I'll clear it with Doug to make sure we don't cover anything that's going to be covered on the weekend. But you can hear, of course, Charles Davis every Saturday morning with Doug Matthews for Forklift Systems Football Saturday. Doug, you were in Knoxville yesterday. What'd you see?
Yep, had a chance to stop by and visit with the coaches, the athletic director, watch practice. Have to be new coaching staff. They give me an awful lot of privileges up there that they certainly do not have to give me. A lot of leeway, a lot of access to things. So I'm always really careful to make sure that the things that I talk about aren't things that are happening in practice. My show, Big Horn Sunday in particular, is really about more information. I don't go in trying to break any stories on anything. So I had an opportunity to watch practice, and it was a good day. Visit with the coaches, and had a good opportunity to spend an hour or two with the athletic director and kind of get his thoughts on some things. He still kind of has a head coaching mentality when he looks at practice and things.
How visible is he at practice?
Very.
Is he on the field? Is he watching from afar?
No, he's probably out there. I'm going to guess. Certainly this time of year, out there. Maybe a half hour or so, and usually watch team periods and things like that. But just really more so when Coach Pruitt asks him things. Coach Pruitt came over during the break and visited with him a while on, you know, Coach Pruitt asked him what he's seeing. And it's kind of interesting how they both kind of see things the same way, as a matter of fact. So, he certainly gives him his opinion when he's been asked. But if he's not asked, he certainly in public doesn't do it. Now privately, I don't know what goes on there. But it's a good mix. I've talked to Coach Pruitt enough to know how much he truly appreciates having Phillip around, simply because of so many different things, from the history of the program to why they did things to what the layout of the practice fields are and how they all that different types of things. In addition to being a head coach at the University of Tennessee,
Doug Matthews with us. Doug, the parts of practice that the media is allowed to watch and see, and included a full practice on a recent Sunday, it sounds like Pruitt has been very hands-on. He's been involved. He's not standing around watching in the middle of a practice field, for instance. He stressed to the media he's going to be himself. He has the head coaching title, but when the football is on the field, he's just going to be a coach. What has been your observation of the way he goes about practice?
Well, it's a lot like if you've seen any of the clips of Saban at practice. Remember now, Coach Saban has been the head coach, 20 years? So he still coaches the cornerbacks for the individual periods in practice. Not every day, but most of the time. That's what Coach Pruitt does. He's a defensive coach. I think he fully realizes, and quite frankly, I think Coach Fulmer probably, when they were discussing this job, gave him his opinion on this, that you're getting here because of the great things you've done defensively.
Mm-hmm.
If I were you, I would continue doing that. Now, to what regard you do it, I think he's going to be very, very involved this year, and I think he's got Kevin Scherer with him, who he's very comfortable with. But, haven't heard this from anybody, but my suspicion is he'll be very hands-on. I don't know that he'll call plays, defenses during a ball game. but I would not be surprised if he was. Again, I don't know if he will or not. I know he'll have a huge hand in what they're calling, though. That's going to be the strength of this team this year. It should be.
It's an interesting balance that the head coach has to make if you're calling plays, because, you know, I watched it firsthand standing next to the sideline when Ken Wisenhunt was the head coach of the Titans. He was calling the offensive plays, and while the defense is on the field, his back is turned to the game, and he's addressing the offensive line. He's going to the quarterback meeting. He's doing things with the wide receivers. And then the offense is back on the field, and he's back engaged. He always had the headset on, but he was concerned with what was going on offense. Take us through the delicate balance of being the head coach and, in essence, a position coach or a coordinator.
We saw the same thing here at Vanderbilt. Coach Mason this year, I think he took over the defensive play calling for 2 years, I believe, maybe three, but two for sure. He's giving that up. You give up a little in the other end because it's, you know, if you're going to really, if you're the head coach and you're not calling either side of the ball, then you're looking at other things. Having said that, though, I think it's a little bit easier defensively because you have, if you're calling defensive plays instead of offensive plays, because you can let, like I mentioned, Coach Scherer and the other coaches coach when they're off the field and you're watching them. Again, I just recommend people look at what Nick Saban does. And that's kind of the same mold I think you're going to see. Coach Saban not nearly as involved as he was when he first became a head football coach. But I suspect that's what you're going to see from Coach Pruitt, because getting this first year in particular, they're going to win ball games. But this is getting that base defense in that's going to really be the backbone of this program. His program is going to be built around a strong, solid defense.
And I know I'm not asking anything that you can't talk about here, because other reporters that have seen certain periods of practice have noticed this. But just like Coach Saban, Jeremy Pruitt spends a lot of time with the defensive backs in practice. So it's interesting to see how you kind of gravitate towards the area you know best. And a lot of reporters are saying in those early periods that Jeremy Pruitt is over there working hands-on with all the defensive backs at Tennessee.
Well, cornerbacks in particular. Remember, Charles Kelly is the safeties coach. Yeah. Charles Kelly was the defensive coordinator at Florida State that followed Jeremy Pruitt and worked with him there. But, you know, all coaches are like that. When I was defensive coordinator at Tennessee and secondary coach, John Majors spent probably half of the individual practice watching. He would get involved every now and then. Philip Fulmer, when he was the head coach, he spent a lot of time down with the offensive line. Because, again, that's what you know. So not a big surprise there. Some coaches don't. Some coaches just, you know, they're out there coaching. And the longer Philip went, and actually the longer Coach Majors went, you know, once they saw that they were getting what they wanted from the coaching part of it, they went and did other things. I think probably that's what Coach Pruitt will do.
Temperament of a coordinator or an assistant coach versus a head coach. And, Coach, I want to ask you about this because you talked about this a lot with Will Muschamp. Will Muschamp in year one at Florida, and really that first stint, looked like a maniac defensive coordinator at times and really lost his cool. He had to learn how to look like and act like a head coach, and he's doing that a lot more now at South Carolina. He did that as his career progressed at Florida. Jeremy Pruitt is an emotional guy. He coached that way throughout his career. How difficult is it to kind of turn that head coach light on for an assistant coach? Or is it simply something that you learn on the job and you eventually adjust?
Well, almost every defensive coordinator that I know is very high energy. You just think of the ones that were here. You know, Jim Schwartz, you know, Dave McGinnis just here, and the same way in college ball. So I think the biggest thing is, as you're a defensive coordinator that goes to the head coaching position, is you have to tone it down a little bit. Muschamp didn't learn that till after he got fired. He didn't even learn it when he went to Auburn, because remember, he got a 15-yard penalty when he was defensive coordinator.
That's right.
But he has learned it at South Carolina, much more reserved. Patience, you have to have a little bit more patience, I think. But again, it's because when you're a coordinator, you always have that head coach there that's either going to calm the situation down or escalate it, depending on what he feels need to be done. Coordinators don't particularly have to do that. You just go hard as you can go, and the head coach kind of lets you know when you need to calm it down a little bit.
Little scuffle right now. I'm looking for 77. He's in the middle of it. We're out of the Titans training camp. Best training camp fight, Doug, throughout your career. Do you have one?
We didn't have any fights. Well, we had it would be a baseball fight.
Okay.
No, we really didn't have
no brawls.
Now, I've heard of some really good ones. No, we didn't have much of them. We didn't. Our head coach didn't put up with too much of that. So
you guys were smart. I mean, I've never understood throwing fists with a guy wearing a helmet.
No, you don't take your helmet off. That's rule number one. But we had a lot of verbal fights, a lot of verbal talk, but not too much.
You did that every day.
I had some of that between coaches, as a matter of fact. Those were certainly all verbal.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's.
Phone lines are open if you've got a football question for our coach, Doug Matthews. 615-737-1045. 737-1045.
All right, Doug, I mentioned before the break, before we get to the calls, the conversation continues to be, at least what I hear and who we talk to, that Ty Chandler is not a first-team running back right now, which I refuse to believe. He's too good, and if he's not the first-team tailback, why would he not be the first-team tailback right now to this staff? What has he not been able to show the staff that they want to see out of their first-team running back?
Well, I would simply say this. I think anybody that is saying that, certainly anybody that's reporting that, number one, they've never seen anything other than a good bit of stretching and some loosening up. Saw a little bit of the scrimmage. And if I were a Tennessee fan, I would take that report with a lot of skepticism. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
A lot of skepticism.
What all can you do with Ty Chandler? I think that's a question I have with this offense. Is he the type of back where, you know, we've been talking about this with Deion Lewis with the Titans.
Yeah.
Can you split him out in the slot? He's obviously going to be active in the screen game. He's a home run threat. He returned a kickoff for a touchdown a year ago. How many different things can you do with him in terms of versatility with this Tyson Helton offense?
He's not the same type of back, but he's very similar to Alvin Kamara. Has excellent hands. I don't think he's quite as elusive. We haven't seen it yet. Now, again, we haven't seen him do this much this in ball games when he was in there. But I think he's going to be someone you can get the ball to out of the backfield. He is certainly a strong inside runner, much so. I think some people are going on his physical size. Well, he's big enough, and I think he's going to be a huge part of this offense. You can bet on that. Now, Coach Pruitt has said they like to play 2 to 3 running backs. I would suspect they probably will do that in this offense. But Ty Chandler is going to be a big, big part of this offense in almost every facet of it. I would say that what and this is going off last year, what Madre London can do, I don't know what Jeremy Banks can do. I don't know. But of the returning players, he is the most versatile of all that group.
Mark, you are on deck, but we start with Kaysen up on line one for Coach Doug Matthews. He's on the road, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Hey, Kaysen.
How's it going?
Great, man.
I have a question. I heard that DB Elante Taylor has possibly the greatest upside of anybody on the team, and I was just wanting to ask Coach Matthew, what will his role be in this first year defense with Coach Pruitt?
Well, I think defensively in the secondary, remembering that they will start 5 defensive backs against almost everybody, there certainly will be what they would, that's the nickel package, and then the dime package that they will certainly run. Every team does would have 6 defensive backs. There's no doubt that Elante Taylor is right in the middle of all that. Frankly, you can just look at the depth chart and see this, there's probably going to be at least 2 freshmen and a transfer, a junior college transfer, that will be in that mix somewhere. I don't think, from talking with the coaches, that they have decided exactly who the starters are going to be and where they're going to start. They're moving them all around. And I'm talking about in the secondary now, but I'm sure they have a good idea who it's going to be. But again, they're not doing that right now. Here's the time to look for it, and I'm going to be talking about this extensively on Big Orange Sunday. Next Wednesday, school starts, so that means when school starts, you're in the 20-hour work week, and that's 10 days ahead of the first ball game. That is normally when you put in your game plan for that first ball game, West Virginia. That's when you have whatever your rotation is. You know, if it's 3 offensive linemen, then whoever the 3 are going to play, nose tackles. If it's 4, whatever, you get your rotation ready, And that's when you really start honing in for that first ball game. Then they'll and it gives them about 10 days before including the game, about 8 good days to get all their game plan in and exactly who's going to be playing what, when, and where. And some of that's going to have to do, quite frankly, with who they're playing against. You know, what skill set do those wide receivers have? Do they need defensive backs that are a little better tacklers, a little better run stoppers, or do they need cover guys? So they'll have the ability to do that. Going to be young in some areas there, but they've got some good young talent there.
You've mentioned in the past that coaches try to get their 70-man travel team ready to go. Is this the time next week when they do that, next Wednesday?
Well, it's what they're looking for right now. And 70 from this standpoint, your 70-man travel team, really, you get down to about 40 players that are going to play much. You know, you got a punter, kicker, all those things in there. But those last few spots, it's just like we're here watching the Titans. Who's going to make those last few spots on this team? They're the ones that can play kick coverage. They can do that extra thing. If I'm equal to somebody and I'm a good kick cover guy or a good return guy, I'm going to get to play that way. That's the way you make a team, and you can't get in a ball game if you're not suited up to get in a ball game. So, that again, as probably, I'm going to say they probably get 90% of who's going to play right now. Mm-hmm. An injury here, an injury there, maybe somebody coming back from an injury, maybe a couple of guys they're not sure of. But that will definitely be decided by next Wednesday.
One guy we have not talked to you about is Sean Schamberger. I know that he's seen some time at different positions. How do you think he factors in to that secondary, and how much do they value a guy who could play nickel, who could play on the outside at corner, who could play safety also?
Well, I have no doubt Sean Schamberger is going to start at either the nickel back or one of the safety backs. And what they're doing now is and a lot of teams are doing this, but their nickel back is they're working all the safeties in there, or most of the safeties in there, some of the corners. But their corners are a little bit younger. Their experience on this defense is in their safety position. So, but from everything last fall I saw, last spring I saw, I would be very surprised if Schamberger isn't starting at one of those two positions. And he's able to play all of them. He played those three positions, both safeties and a nickel. Valuable guy to have.
If you call in now to talk with Doug Matthews, you can go to the front of the line at 615-737-1045. Mark is next up. Hey, Mark.
Hey. I was calling in to see how you guys think that the defense will do against Will Greer and the receivers at West Virginia.
Well, it's certainly going to be a big challenge early. There are very few head coaches that like to start a season versus a team that throws the ball all over the courtyard. But that's what they're going to be facing. Tennessee fans, I'm not sure that Coach Pruitt ever played against Will Greer when he was at Alabama. I guess he probably did at Georgia. He was at Georgia when Will Greer was at Florida, so he's played against him. Knows what he can do. Very talented player. They are going to spread you out a lot, it's going to present some problems for Tennessee. But Tennessee's going to give them a bunch of problems, too, because you can bet. This is one thing almost all the 3-4 defensive coordinators do. If you don't have a tight end in the game, in other words, if you got two short sides, most all defensive coordinators who run 3-4 are going to bring pressure on you because you don't have that extra play back in there. So you can probably expect a lot of pressure. I don't know what the matchups are going to be on that game yet because I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the starting lineups either way. West Virginia's going to have an advantage there, but I think Tennessee will have a very good plan against them. It's a similar game plan to what they played several times in the past, so these coaches will have a good game plan. Now the question is how those matchups going to be.
You mentioned bring pressure if they don't have the tight end. Let's say they don't have one in the game at all. Are you pulling pressure to one side to try to force the ball to one side of the field versus the other based on your skill set at one corner or the other?
Depends on who you're playing, but West Virginia, their quarterback, they're not going to run the quarterback much.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is, that started happening in my last few years in coaching. When I was a defense coordinator, if you're going to bring pressure, you like to bring it from the short side. In other words, away from the tight end. Because you have one less blocker, it's a shorter side. You can get to the quarterback a little bit quicker. When you got two short sides, it's a little bit easier to do it. Now, what all these offenses are able to do, though, they get the ball out of there quick. But again, you're forcing them to get the ball out quick, and that means you have opportunities if the ball comes out quick to make some plays on it. So how much will he blitz? I don't know, but certainly if you just go back and look at what Coach Pruitt has done at his three previous stops where he's been coordinator, Alabama, Georgia, Florida State, he has no problem playing a lot of man coverage and bringing a lot of pressure if you get to moving the football.
How much can a game like this to start the season help your defense? Win or lose, whatever happens, but playing a team that most people believe will be one of the top offenses points-wise, yards-wise, at the end of the year, how much does that help you as sort of a building block moving forward, knowing that you've seen one of the best?
Well, I mentioned Sunday, and I think Tennessee, I don't know that they're doing this, but they're really kind of looking at this as a one-game season. From this standpoint, after West Virginia, they have ETSU and they have UTEP. And then it starts a run of the five best teams Tennessee will play next year, starting with Florida. So I don't know that it'll help or hurt. I have a strong belief, and again, I'm going to talk a lot more about this Sunday, that the starting lineup and the guys that play the most against West Virginia could very easily change in that next two-week period before Florida gets here, because there's so many young players and new players. You know, there's 29, I think, either transfers and freshmen that were just come out this fall. So they're going to have to be learning what they're going to be doing. So while I think the great majority will be there, I wouldn't be surprised at all by the time Florida gets here to see some different players playing significant amounts of plays.
Doug, it looks like that Tennessee's going to be relying on freshmen in multiple spots. I know that that's increasingly more common across college football, but it's also not ideal for head coaches trying to rely on those freshmen that are straight out of high school. What positions are you least comfortable having to play freshmen at for the coach? Like, are there just specific positions in general where you just don't want the freshmen playing?
Well, you certainly don't want one playing at quarterback. I think offensive line would be next.
Is that because of body development more than anything?
Yeah, and listen, boy, against all the different fronts you see on defense now, that you see on offense from the defense, all the different looks you're going to be seeing, it's very difficult to learn those things. And then also the physical strength. Listen, I don't care how much you've lifted. Trey Smith was a different dude, let me put it that way. But most of these guys come in, they're 17 years old. They still have pimples on their face. They hadn't shaved very much. And even though they're just physically not ready, the difference between a 17, 18-year-old freshman and a 21, 22-year-old offense and defensive lineman is huge, bigger than anywhere else. So I think that those would be the two areas right now. Having said that, I think if you look offensively, I don't think there's going to be many areas where he's probably going to have to play freshmen. Maybe a couple, but this team offensively has got a good group of players who've been there. Defensively, secondary, you're going to have to play freshmen simply because you're going to play a bunch of them. Now, who it's going to be, don't know. But freshmen probably particularly there, and maybe a freshman defensive lineman or two. They don't have a freshman linebacker, so they don't have to worry about playing one of those.
Let's say hello to Jay, who's been waiting patiently. Jay, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Coach. Thanks for your insight. Just curious, with Charles Kelly and Jeremy Pruitt's background at Alabama, Florida State, Georgia, where they really relied on team speed to execute their kind of style of play, the attacking style, and assuming that Tennessee doesn't have quite that level of team speed, how do you compensate as a defensive coordinator when you don't have that type of team speed you're used to, and then executing your own style? Thank you.
Well, that's a great question, and that is the $64,000 question. If you don't have a lot of team speed, now I think this team will be a little faster than most people think, but it's not going to be as fast as the championship teams are. Secondary in particular, they want to listen. Both these guys, Coach Pruitt and Coach Kelly, they're man coverage guys. They like to play man almost every snap. Even their zone coverages have an awful lot of read man worked into those. Does he have the cornerback talent to do that speed-wise? Not in the veterans. That's why I think there's going to be a great opportunity for a couple of freshmen to play in those corner positions, because we know what those guys can do. We've seen them play in the past, playing ball games. So the question is, how much zone do we play? Can we play that much zone and be effective? It's hard to bring a lot of pressure when you're playing zone. How much do we do that? Are our upfront people, are they, and I'm talking about the linebackers and the defensive line, can they put enough pressure on a passing team without being able to bring people and play man? That's the question right now, and he doesn't have that answer, I don't think, right now. He's got a good idea. This defensive team will not be able to execute the style of defense that Coach Pruitt would like to play, all of it. So he's going to have to pick and choose, and when different players are in there, you're going to have to play different styles of defense. But he's fully capable of doing that. But they are a pressure defense. They're not going to quit doing that. They're not going to quit playing man coverage. They're not going to quit trying to be as disruptive as they can, but they're probably going to be doing it with players who at times are just even with the offensive players, maybe a little bit behind. You got to be a little bit smarter, and you got to rely on field position and other things there. And then he's fully capable of doing that. That's the one thing I'm sure about with this head football coach from a defense coordinator standpoint. And that's why I think he'll be so greatly involved in play calling early in his career up there.
I remember the comments after the spring game about quitting, Coach, and still to this moment, no players that I know of have quit since those comments were made. No one's left the program, no opportunity. The one opportunity that the media had to talk to players, they asked Darren Kirkland why he stayed and what the sales pitch was. And Kirkland said that Pruitt told him there was no sales pitch. He just laid out the process and left it up to him whether or not he wanted to stay or not. I didn't beg him to stay at Tennessee. He did not make false promises. Can you take us behind the curtain on that and how difficult, or maybe it's not difficult, for a coach to do or not do?
Well, my sense on what happened to Darren Kirkland was I don't think there'd been a lot of communication one way or the other. What I believe that he came out of that with, first off, he met with the athletic director, and I think was kind of given some assurances on some things. And I'm talking about, hey, why are you leaving here? I think Philip did a real good job of telling where this program was going to be in another, hopefully this year, if not next year. And I think the other thing was, Coach Britt, when new coaches come in, all say the same thing, this and everything is open for competition. Well, I'm sure it is, but I'd be willing to bet that probably Trey Smith was pretty safe at some spot on the offensive line. I don't know that, but maybe there's somebody competing with him. And I think that's once Darren Kirkland heard that, he decided to stay. And I think it will be proved to him and certainly Tennessee fans it was a good decision.
Does it send any message that no players have left?
Yeah.
With the new coach?
I think a couple of things there. Number one, he made very plain when he came in. He needs bodies. He wants bodies there. I think that message that was sent last year, that quitting thing was, it's hard to quit in a spring game, but you certainly, can, I guess. And I think he's talked about quitting. He talks about quitting in practice a lot, and not quitting, walking off and quitting, but quitting on the play. More things like that. And I think that's the point he got across. And I think the team appreciated that. And remember, they had all summer workouts to hear the message from him on that. So I don't think that's a problem at all right now.
I want to ask you about Brandon Kennedy, because he doesn't give out a lot of compliments with his interviews. He gave a bunch of them to Brandon Kennedy saying that he loves how he competes. He knows how to strain, a word that Coach Pruitt uses a lot. It seems that he was brought in as sort of a shining example of, this was a guy who does everything we asked at Alabama. We need more of these guys now at Tennessee. Do you see it that way with him also?
Well, there's no doubt that one of the pressing matters for Coach Pruitt and this staff is to get him to practice and to eventually play at the level that they expect. This team is not there there yet. We know that from other reasons, from other seasons and watching last fall and everything. So, yes, I think Brandon Kennedy brings a couple of things. He has the ability to show by leadership what he has learned and knows from going through it. The other thing he does is he's one of two players on this team. Brandon Kennedy and Ryan Johnson in the offensive line are two players that can play multiple positions. Now, all of them are kind of taught that. But both those guys can play center. Both those guys can play both guards. And Ryan, in particular, with his size, could play tackle. So they're very valuable players. And I think that's what he's looking for. You mentioned the word, you know, I noticed that too. I've never heard a coach use the word strain. You know, work hard, give it all you got, empty the bucket. I'm assuming that's what he was talking about, but he said it a bunch. So it's one of his catchwords without question. I could just, you know, I can remember myself straining for the finish line to try to come in fourth or fifth in the 100-yard dash when it was dash, not meters back then, by the way, John. But, you know, straining, it's kind of self-descriptive. I'm straining to get every last ounce of effort out of what I can give this particular play.
Doug, last year we spoke on continuity with the offensive line, and you were not that concerned with continuity up front then. Should we be concerned at all now if guys are going to be moving around whenever the season starts, when bodies begin to plug in and you get some guys back?
No, I think he's going to have probably six or seven, maybe eight offensive linemen that are going to play the majority of the ball game. Now, that sixth, seventh, and eighth could change. I think they're pretty much set on the five starters they're going to go out there with. And it would not surprise me at all to see if a game is competitive, those guys, five starters, play the whole ball game. You know, maybe have that sixth or seventh guy, but you easily can get through a ball game and a season. I've seen it happen often with six or seven offensive linemen because they can literally play the whole ball game. And I think Tennessee's pretty set on those five and probably six. They're trying to find a seventh or an eighth. And again, those six, seven, and eighth, I think, will change as we go through the season because some of these young guys are talented, very talented.
Leave us with just your reaction to everything that's been reported about Maryland and DJ Durkin and the workouts and you know, different places you've been. I'm certain that you try to push guys to the max, but nothing that would embarrass a player.
Well, here's what really shocked me, and there's not much that I haven't seen at the six stops I was at. First off, and this is shocking in a positive way, I never ever thought I would see, and I watched it three times, that Maryland president, that you talk about from the heart. You may not agree how he did it, but boy, from the heart of taking responsibility. And that
they did
was,
that, you're right.
That was, I mean, to me, that really caught my eye. The other part I was, and when I was up in Knoxville, I talked to Philip about this, and we talked about some of the trainers. The shocking thing to me was every workout that you have a trainer or two trainers there for that very reason. Certainly early morning workouts. Coaches aren't there for that. They can't be. But you have a trainer there, and there's been several times in practice where a guy get a little dizzy. Man, the first thing you do is get him under that tent and get him in if it's anywhere close to a heat stroke. I mean, all of us, I think, know this. You get an ice bath. And the shocking thing to me on that was that if it's as reported, he got to the hospital over an hour later, and his body temperature was still 106. And the first thing you do, again, you get in an ice water bath. I mean, so
you try to cool down the person.
And why that didn't happen, I don't know. Now, some of the things that came out after that, you know, a lot of those things, I'm talking about the coach said this, the coach did this, they made me do this.
Feeding the guy until he threw up, knocking his tray out of his hand.
Sometimes those things are overstated. Maybe they aren't. I think that's what the investigation is going to be. But, you know, you always fear in the back of your mind, you fear things like that in summer workouts, heat, particularly with big linemen.
you know, guys like me, we can go out there and run all day long, but those big linemen.
300-pound guys.
That was the shocking thing to me, that an hour later, they still had not administered the ice bath and the things like that.
We have been on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Be sure to catch him this Saturday morning, 9 to 11 for Forklift Systems Football Saturday, 11 a.m. Coach to Coach with Larry Stone, Doug Matthews, and Dave McGinnis. And then the best hour-long discussion on all things Tennessee Vols. It happens every Sunday morning with Big Orange Sunday, 8 o'clock every Sunday morning. You can find those podcasts at 1045thezone.com, coachtocoachradio.com, and coachdougmatthews.com.